the OTB Podcast Network.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power. A more electric team up than Salah and Mane. Gamble responsibly. See dunluey.net.
It's Friday afternoon. It is time for the Paddy Power half hour. Coming up over the next 30 minutes or so, we will be looking ahead to the Community Shield, which will pit Liverpool against Arsenal, the winners of the Premier League and FA Cup in England last season. A bombshell dropped by Leo Messi this week, where he has decided to leave Barcelona. The club say they want 700 million for him to leave. He believes he can leave for free. We're going to be looking at where the Argentine genius could end up for next season. Chelsea have been splashing the cash this week. Thiago Silva has arrived today. They signed Ben Chilwell for around 50 million during the week. And it looks like Kai Havertz could be another 100 million burning a hole in their pocket currently. We'll be looking at Matt Doherty's prospective move to Spurs and the windfall it could see for Bohemians of around 2 million euro. We'll talk about Bohemians in Europe this week. Shamrock Rovers progressing on penalties, but Bowes losing out on the spot kicks, and Celtic out of the Champions League qualifiers at the earliest stage they've been the Scottish champions since 2005. To break all that down, we're joined by Emmett O'Keefe and Phil Egan. Good afternoon to you, gentlemen.
Hiya, Will.
How's it going, Will?
Phil, I'll start off with yourself. Community Shield comes around. I mean, it's felt like a very short pre-season as we get into the traditional curtain raiser for the English season, and Liverpool have picked up an injury with Virgil van Dijk during the week in a friendly, but this has come around remarkably quickly.
Yeah, I mean, the word there is Van Dijk is fine. It was a bit of a knock. But yeah, even that game against Salzburg the other day, you could see Liverpool players were heavy-legged. So they were probably having morning sessions where Klopp was doing a lot of running with them. And obviously, Rian Brewster comes off the bench and scores a couple of goals. But it's a strange one in the fact that usually we get this game and then the following week the season starts. But obviously, there's 2 weeks in between this. But it's something Klopp has talked about in his press conference in the last hour or so, where they knew the game was coming and it's a good game to have. Obviously, Arsenal finished the season strongly, only played that cup final on the 1st of August. But, you know, he's trying to make a few signings. The Aubameyang contract hasn't been signed yet, but obviously Arsenal, not only did they beat Chelsea in the cup final, they beat Liverpool as well at the Emirates, which was the strange game where Liverpool just were their own worst enemies by gifting Arsenal two goals. But yeah, it's one of those games where you don't really, if you win it, it's great because you get a bit of silverware if people actually count it. If you lose, people just say, well, it was only the Community Shield. But and that's pretty much how the narrative will go after. If Liverpool win, people will say, yeah, Liverpool look good. If they lose, they lost last season's Community Shield to Manchester City, so they didn't care. If Arsenal win, Arteta, yeah, things are going to be so much better this season. He's got his, you know, he's going to have his first full season. If they lose, then it'll be Arsenal have a lot of ground to make up in Liverpool. That's usually how it runs.
I would imagine as well, Phil, when it comes to this game, it'll be seen as a meaningful friendly for both clubs to play before their players are released away for international duty. And then they come back for the start of the Premier League. I'd imagine it's a game that Arsenal and Liverpool won't be too unhappy about having.
No, and I suppose we've seen in the last few days as well, with players going to play international football and they've been away on holidays, certain players, Paul Pogba and Tanguy Ndombele, obviously were withdrawn from the France squad because they tested positive for COVID-19. So there's that dynamic that has to be thrown into it as well, where, you know, obviously Klopp and Arteta will be able to pick close enough to their first teams, but then in 2 weeks' time, who knows what effect the international break is going to have on certain squads, because basically once clubs let them go into their international groups, it falls on the international squads and the players themselves to make sure that they stay as safe as possible. But yeah, I think you're right in the fact that it was a strange end of the season, obviously. And for Liverpool, obviously, having the season wrapped up so quickly, they lost games where, obviously, they were beaten badly by Manchester City. They lost to Arsenal. And people wondered, was that just down to the fact that they'd wrapped up the league? Or was it, people thinking that maybe Liverpool are starting to, people are trying to work them out? Personally, I think it was just a case the league was wrapped up. They took their eye off the ball and they played in second and third gear.
Emmett, can I ask you about Arsenal? Because they finished the season pretty strongly. They registered those victories against Liverpool, Man City, Chelsea at the tail end of the season. It seems Mikel Arteta very much determined to do things his own way. He's got this kind of mini preseason now to be ready for the season starting at the end of next month. How do you fancy Arsenal are going to get on, first of all, tomorrow, and then in a more general sense, going into the 2021 season?
Arteta's kind of start at Arsenal, it reminds me of when Pochettino came into Tottenham originally, and the way he's kind of, I think, trying to set kind of non-negotiable standards. And certainly you've seen a far increased work rate from their forwards in terms of their high pressing game. To me, one of the most interesting angles about the game at the weekend would be the debut of William Saliba for Arsenal centre-half. That's clearly been a problem position for Arsenal for many seasons, with the likes of Mustafi, Sokratis, etc. have obviously struggled. Arsenal signed him for a sizable transfer fee of around $27 million last summer, but he was loaned back to Saint-Étienne last season. Despite being only 19, he apparently was outstanding in League One last season and looks a pretty big prospect. This week, Arsenal also seem to be on the verge of signing Brazilian centre-half Gabriel Magalhães from Lille. So I think potentially one of Arsenal's biggest weaknesses the last few seasons is clearly being addressed. And I think if at least one of them became a legitimate Premier League centre-half this season, I think it would go a long way to improvement. I would still be concerned about the midfield, and obviously the Aubameyang saga is rumbling on. But I think despite maybe some of the problems above him, I think Arteta is doing a very good job, and I think Arsenal are possibly a team on the up.
They, I suppose, Emmett, have a few problems to solve. Mesut Ozil, trying to get him off the books. He seems quite determined to stay around and see out his contract, unless Arsenal probably pay him to leave the club. As you say, they probably need to get a little bit of reinforcement in midfield. But they've looked at their defence. They've got a good goalkeeper in Bernd Leno, a good backup goalkeeper as well in Martinez. And then you look at their strike force, lots of young players coming through. If they can get two or three important pieces of business, including that Aubameyang contract, sorted out between now and October, they're probably not in bad shape for an assault on the top four next season.
Definitely. I think the Aubameyang one is quite interesting as well, because my own personal feeling would be that the best long-term decision for Arsenal would be to sell him, given his age. I think it's going to be hard to get a significant transfer fee for him after this season, given he's in his 30s. And I feel as well Arsenal aren't going to be challenging for the title next season. And I also really rate the Arsenal young striker Gabriel Martinelli extremely highly. I think between him and Lacazette, I think they could fill some of the void that Aubameyang might leave. But as you say, if Aubameyang did leave for next season, it would give them somewhat of a hit.
What do you think, Phil? Arsenal ahead of next season?
Yeah, I take Emmett's point about the age and the profile of Aubameyang, but I just think in terms of the message you would send to Arsenal before the start of a season if they cashed in on him, it would basically say, you know, we're surrendering that momentum we built at the end of last season, and Aubameyang was key to that. It was him that won them the FA Cup. Obviously, he's their captain. I know they probably don't want to get stung, but I don't think it's the same situation as somebody like Mesut Ozil, where obviously Aubameyang won't command as much of a salary, a weekly salary, but also he gives you so much more than Ozil. And Willian's been a good signing as well. I think we're going to see a lot better from Nicola Pepe, who showed glimpses, but definitely he was one of those players in the last few games of the season where you could start to see the quality. And, you know, it was his first season in the Premier League, coming from France as well. If they get the business done at the back, obviously Saliba, he's so young. It was interesting against MK Dons the other day. He went with three at the back. I just don't think Arteta wants to play three at the back. But at the moment, because of the deficiencies in there, he feels that that's what he has to do. And Kieran Tierney's part of that back three. But you would like to think that Tierney is going to be your left wing back if you're playing a three. That's where Magalhães, if he comes in, he's a left-sided centre-half. He can play there, and then obviously you free up Tierney to play as a wing-back or just an orthodox left-back. And we didn't see the best of Tierney because he was injured, but there was sure signs at the end of last season just how good he is.
Phil, when it comes to Liverpool, you know, back-to-back 90-point-plus seasons, finally getting the monkey off the back in terms of ending that 30 years for an English League title, perhaps would be a bit disappointed they didn't go further in the Cups and particularly in the Champions League. But they've resisted going out to sign players during this transfer window so far. We'll see what develops over the next 6 weeks or so. But it seems they're going to be going largely with the squad that they had from last season. Is that squad good enough to go deep back into the competitions and to defend the Premier League title again?
Yeah, well, I mean, they did this last summer where they didn't sign any significant players, and you know, people thought the fact that they'd run City so close, I mean, a point behind them, and they thought now is the time to invest. But Klopp had confidence in the squad that he had, and then they go out and they absolutely walk the league and could have won up by more, but I said earlier on that they kind of went into second gear for the last few games of the season. They needed a left back. They needed backup for Andy Robertson, a natural left back, because Milner and Gomez obviously played the Merseyside derby after the restart. They can do a job, but they're not natural left-footed players. So Tsimikas was a good signing for them. Minamino was brought in January, and you know he didn't hit the ground running. That's not a concern. He's look at some of the players Klopp has signed. You think of Fabinho, took him a while to get into the team. So Minamino looked even sharper the other day, where he's going to play a more, he's going to have a bigger role to play next season. And look, there is a slight concern with the front three that if something happens one of them, or if you want to take one of them off, what's the backup there? You know, Klopp has been talking today about Rian Brewster. He came off the bench the other day, scored the two goals, also scored against Stuttgart. They don't know what they're going to do with him yet, whether they keep him or they send them out to a Premier League club on loan for the season. I know Sheffield United's a club that's been mentioned, but Minamino is an option as cover for Roberto Firmino. But Origi, I always felt Origi should have been sold after the Champions League final that he scored, and that was the highest value that he had. And, you know, there's just still too much of a drop-off when something happens to the front three or you don't start them. But midfield, if they get Thiago, that's where Klopp is going to do most of his rotating, because obviously there's going to be so many fixtures this season, and that's your engine room. That's where you got to make the changes. So if he gets Thiago and keeps Wijnaldum, he's got plenty of options. Even if Wijnaldum goes, we don't know what's going to happen there. It doesn't look like he's getting a new contract, but he might be happy enough just to see it out and play this season and then go on a free next summer. But no, Liverpool are still the team to beat. The reason all these clubs behind them are going out splashing the cash is because they have to close the gap.
Yeah. Emmett, do Paddy Power still see Liverpool as favourites for the Premier League next season?
Not at the moment. So it's currently the prices are Man City 8-11, Liverpool 2-1, Chelsea 11-1, and Man United 14-1, with the Arsenal outsiders at 45-1.
I think very clearly a two-horse race. So
it's interesting though, because I think when the prices opened initially, maybe about a month or so ago, Chelsea and Man United would have been bigger prices. And they have been backed in somewhat. I think I would expect Chelsea to sign another goalkeeper, and I'd say maybe either at least one more centre half after signing Thiago Silva today. So I could see over those prices, maybe Chelsea's prices shortening a bit. Because last season, say, as is kind of well documented, Kepa had the worst save percentage of the Premier League and one of the worst in Premier League history. So I think that's clearly a position they need to address.
Our football coverage here on Off the Ball is with thanks to Paddy Power. Phil, when it comes to Chelsea, they're splashing the cash. This was one of the factors that was brought up repeatedly when people were assessing Frank Lampard's first year in charge. He didn't have a transfer window to start with. He had to play the kids. Well, he spent two summers worth of money already in the first couple of months of this transfer window.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like he was stuffing all his money under the mattress and now he's just going wild in the sales. Now, I don't know how much value he's got in the sales, but the bottom line is Chelsea needed players. Definitely think that the goalkeeper is an issue. Obviously, by the end of the season, Caballero was starting, and it's never a good sign if Willy Caballero is your first choice goalkeeper. Kepa, it's rare you see keepers that when the confidence gets drained out of them so much that they can recover at the same club. You see glimpses where mistakes come in or they creep in, but Kepa just looked like he had absolutely no confidence at all. The mistakes were there as well, but also the fans had no confidence in him at all either. So if they don't get a new goalkeeper, it's all well and good having the likes of Timo Werner and Hakim Ziyech, and obviously we expect Havertz to get done and Thiago Silva's there, Chilwell's done. But if they don't have a good goalkeeper, you know, there's still going to be question marks about the defence, because it's all well and good having a better defence, but if your goalkeeper isn't up to it, then that just leads to nervousness. Those games where you're 1-0 up or you're a goal up and you're trying to see it out, but you don't trust your goalkeeper, that just puts defences on the edge. And then also, it just gives confidence to opposition teams knowing that, you know what, get a shot on goal here and this keeper isn't the keeper that Chelsea thought they were getting. The world's most expensive keeper certainly hasn't lived up to it.
Interesting point you bring up, Phil, because I was speaking to Kenny Cunningham a couple of weeks ago on Off the Ball, and I asked him about the recruitment at the time that they were being linked to Thiago Silva, and the feeling was they would get Chilwell over the line. They've both happened this week. He reckons it's less so the personnel at Chelsea, given that it was largely the same defence that Maurizio Sarri had worked with, and a lot of the players that Antonio Conte had turned into a good defence a couple of seasons previously. He reckons that a defence coach is probably more important than players coming in, because a lot of Chelsea's problems were conceding at set pieces, there were organisational problems on the counter-attack. Is that a bigger issue than the actual players they're going to bring in?
Yeah, well, I mean, this is something we're going to see. If they line up, say, against Brighton, they're playing Brighton in the opening weekend, and they start with Chilwell and Thiago Silva in their team, and they're still conceding goals from corners or set pieces, that would suggest they're not coached well enough, that they don't know, the players in the team don't know what their role is when they're defending set pieces. And Lampard's obviously a new coach. He's had his first season in the Premier League. He's had a season in the Championship. You know, he was shortlisted in some places for the Manager of the Year award, and, you know, it made a lot of people laugh. He did okay. You know, he didn't have a transfer window to work with. He obviously lost Eden Hazard. It was his first job in the Premier League. You know, there was moments where you thought, yeah, this could work. But the pressure is on, because when you spend that cash, you have to back it up with results. And, you know, if they start slowly, if they lose a few games early, don't forget they're playing Liverpool early in the campaign as well. And there'd be a nice bit of a needle, given what happened at Anfield a few weeks ago when Lampard and the Liverpool bench got a bit lippy with each other. So, yeah, there's going to be pressure on them. That free pass that I think Lampard got, and some, especially Manchester United fans, probably were scratching their heads thinking, why does Lampard not get the same abuse that Solskjaer gets? But, you know, the honeymoon period is very much over for Lampard now.
Emmett, when it comes to defenders going to London, Spurs are about to sign Matt Doherty. Right-back's been a bit of an issue since Kyle Walker left. Serge Aurier had a few indifferent performances last season. It looks like they've gone for Wolves' rampaging right-back, and he's going to be the most high-profile Republic of Ireland player in the Premier League in terms of at least where he plays next season.
Yeah, I think it's fantastic to see an Irish player kind of moving to the upper reaches of the Premier League for kind of a significant transfer fee. My only concern would be that it would be a kind of a classic Mourinho move, I would say, to sign a player and then play him in the position in which he wasn't excelling. Because I firmly believe that Doherty is a unique kind of player. I don't think he's definitely much more of a right wing back than a conventional right back. The way he kind of gets on the end of crosses and is like plays nearly like an attacking midfielder for Wolves sometime. And I'd be worried that Mourinho would kind of play him as kind of a solid right back and not let him cross the halfway line that much, because I don't think that's the way you get the best out of Matt Doherty. But I'm delighted to see Doherty get the move, and hopefully he gets used in the right position.
Phil, that's a genuine concern. Mourinho doesn't generally like to push his fullbacks up too far. He tends to be defence orientated when it comes to his fullbacks. While Matt Doherty played most of his good football with Wolves, overlapping on the right-hand side, sometimes even coming inside to get the ball, could he be restricted at Spurs under a Mourinho system?
Yeah, well, I mean, if you look at Serge Aurier, even under Mourinho, he did get forward, but the weakest part of his game was defending. So Doherty is certainly a better defender than Serge Aurier. In terms of maybe what it does for Stephen Kenny as well, probably not a bad thing from an Irish point of view that he will be playing as a more orthodox right back. But I still think he'll get chances to go forward. And, that, you know, with Mourinho, we know there was a few moments last season where you thought, how's this going to end? Well, we know how it tends to end with Mourinho. It's when it ends. And this is his first full season as Spurs manager. And maybe if it doesn't go great for Matt Doherty, the only plus there is Jose Mourinho probably won't be around for much longer. That if a new manager comes in, they could say, right, I've seen how you played at Wolves, and I want you to play like that for me. So Mourinho will obviously have his ideas, but I don't think Mourinho is going to be hanging around that long, because, you know, there's just too many better teams than Spurs in the Premier League, and that'll annoy the hell out of Jose.
Emmett, I'm not sure if you've got the price in front of you. I could well be putting you on the spot here, but how are the bookmakers seeing Stephen Kenny going into his first few games as Republic of Ireland manager?
Yeah, no. So we have the match prices for the Nations League anyway. So we're in against Bulgaria. It's 15-8 Bulgaria. The draw 2-1, and the Republic of Ireland 13-10. I'm intrigued to see how we set up, and just I think for the first time in many years, I think I'm really looking forward to kind of, I know the Nations League isn't a friendly, but it's not quite a qualifier either, and I normally wouldn't be looking forward to these games at all, but I'm really looking forward to this, to see how some of the young players are used. And I feel like I know Phil referenced that we'll be playing a back four, but I really think we should try playing a back three. I think Seamus Coleman is made for a kind of a wide position, a back three. I don't think he's the engine to go up and down the line anymore like he used to, but he's still very solid defensively, as you saw in the Merseyside derby after lockdown, the way he shut down Sadio Mane. I think him, John Egan and Shane Duffy would be an excellent back three. And then playing our two most consistent Premier League performers, which would be Enda Stevens and Matt Doherty, in their right positions. I would love to see Kenny try that out.
What do you reckon, Phil? I mean, he has in press conferences mentioned that he's not entirely wedded to four at the back. He's not entirely wedded to any given system, that he'll put players and a system together that fits the squad best. There is that potential that he could go to that exact back three that Emmett's just mentioned.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with Emmett. It's perfect. Yeah, like you have Enda Stevens and Matt Doherty who are suited in the wing-back roles. Seamus Coleman plays that role that Aspilicueta played so well for Chelsea under Conte, where because he's a fullback, he is just so used to sweeping up. So it works well. The thing is, Stephen Kenny's been asked about this so many times, and it just always seems, what I take from it is that he's more inclined to go with a four at the back, whether it's a 4-3-3 is the way he says he wants to play it, but it can become a 4-5-1 in defence when you're behind the ball, and that just seems the way he wants to play. But yeah, it's exciting times, because even the squad now, you're going to see fresh faces. You'd be looking forward to seeing what his first team is going to be. Does he go, if he does go four at the back, does he go Doherty or Seamus Coleman? I think if you're going to play four at the back and you want your fullbacks to go forward, he'd have to go with Doherty. But then, yeah, you know, I mean, that's not an easy call to make. And Stephen Kenny's finding out from his first squad naming the other day, where he left out Michael Obafemi. Now, I don't know if Obafemi didn't put that tweet out, would there have been as much of a reaction that he was left out? But
probably not. I mean, it does beg the question of whether he was spoken to about whether he was going to be in the under-21 squad or not. Like, you would imagine that conversation would happen. Look, I'm not bringing you into the senior squad for these two games next month. Want to see how you get on with the under-21s, and we'll see what happens with the next senior squad for the qualifier the month after.
Yeah, and given the fact that the 21s are very much in the mix for qualifying for their first tournament, that it wouldn't be the hardest sell to say to Michael Obafemi, look, Jim Crawford's in charge now, you know him, you played with the 21s before, we'd like to see how you get on, these are really important games for us as well, and you know, obviously the potential then to see how you get on in the Premier League with Southampton. Obviously, Southampton finished the season very well. Obafemi got his goal at Old Trafford as well. And then you can work your way into it. But this is what I'm saying about Stephen Kenny is that, you know, he's going to find out, well, I'm sure he already knows, but every decision you make is going to be scrutinised and criticised. Some people will praise Stephen Kenny for certain decisions, but just the way football is nowadays, the way social media acts, that if you make the wrong call, for example, you pick Matt Doherty over Seamus Coleman and it doesn't work out, you just leave yourself open for all sorts.
Yeah, results business. And unfortunately, to have to start off with three so important fixtures in his first month and a bit as manager competitively. Emmett, when it comes to Celtic, I was reading a press release from Paddy Power this week that you guys have now odds against to be in charge at the end of this season, that there's a chance he could walk before the end of the campaign, despite Celtic going for 10 in a row. I'd imagine a huge amount of that is motivated by the fact that it's going to be tricky for them to qualify for the Europa League now, with two more rounds to navigate after going out of the Champions League early. And also his comments about many players now looking to leave the club, and that he could facilitate those exits before the end of the transfer window.
Yeah, definitely. I think as well, given the lack of gate receipts for the foreseeable future, I think like Scottish teams need that Champions League revenue much more than the English clubs, given their lack of TV deal there. I think this season, with the lack of gate receipts, there would have been a huge premium place and make the Champions League. So it's clearly a huge disappointment. I'm skeptical of how I know Lennon has an excellent record at Celtic, but his record away from Parkhead is fairly middling at the likes of Bolton and even in the lower reaches of the Scottish League. So I'm not sure how much of a loss he'd be, but I think certainly not making the Champions League was a bit of a disaster for Celtic.
There you go. They've got a job to get there. The Irish team's had a mixed week in Europe. Derry and Bohemians losing out, but Shamrock Rovers progressing very dramatically on penalties last evening. That's something we could probably talk about next week as they prepare for round two of the Europa League qualifiers. Dundalk will be in action in that round as well. And my thanks to both Emmett and Phil for joining me on the Paddy Power Half Hour, and we'll chat to you soon.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power. A more electric team up than Salah and Mane. Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.